Blog Talk Radio.
When the opponent expands, I contract. When he contracts, I expand. And when there is an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Now, you must remember, the enemy has only images and illusions, behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and he will break the enemy.
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Yes, folks. Welcome to yet another fun, fiery, fact-finding mission. Talk about alliteration. Fact-finding mission of AfroNerd, Captain Kirk, and of course the uncanny Daryl B. This is the Grindhouse edition of the show, a dual program, a double feature, where at 6 p.m. we have the Comic Shop, and of course at 7 p.m. we have AfroNerd Radio, a.k.a. AfroNerd, featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove, and then we'll simply do what we always do. We will unpack on pop culture. Let's get to it. This is Fat Albert, the Fat Albert theme from Dig, Saturday Morning Cartoon's Greatest Hits. We'll be right back. And again, let's groove.
Once again, welcome to the Comic Shop, a.k.a. the Grindhouse. First up, of course, is the Captain. Captain Kirk, you need it in the bridge and in engineering and in the ready room. How will he do it? Let's get to it.
You
emotional energy. Let's go.
Yes. And, of course, we have the uncanny, always uncanny, always thoughtful, thought-provoking, I should say, Daryl B.
So for this week, everything's been feeling kind of weird. And I realized something. David Walker, you have made my enemies list.
Our own David Walker.
All right. Plug again for his excellent book, The Adventures of Darius Logan, Volume Book 1, The Super Justice Force. Okay? Plug for the book. I'll do this quick. All right? So something eerie has always hit me about the dates of this week. Thursday the 19th, Friday the 20th. And you know what? The problem is it syncs up with dates in the book exactly. So now I'm waiting for a hero to get tortured on television. I'm waiting for a black Thanksgiving. I'm waiting for a monstrous robot attack now. Thank you, David Walker, for putting these thoughts in my head. There will be payback. And guys,
you're saying he did a good job.
Oh yes, he did. We know. We've read the books by now. It's been an excellent book, and I'm waiting for the book two to come out. But as I say this, when something is lasting that you can remember the dates, you know, people Photoshop and play with the Back to the Future dates all the time on Facebook and Instagram, saying, oh, this is the date, this is the date, this is the date, and they keep on playing with it. This one left such a memory in my head that I actually live these days on Thursday and Friday. Like, this feels awfully familiar. Why does this feel weird? And it wasn't until traveling through the city, I had the book with me and read it last night, as I'm on the LIRR train, going, now I know why, damn that Walker. So there you go. Folks, pick up the book if you haven't. Go to David Walker's website.
You know, I have to commend Q-Storm, our stalwart listener. He's in the chat room, and he says, are we going to discuss Jason Momoa being cast as Aquaman when any brain-dead person can see he should be Namor? Let's skip around a little bit. Let's explore that a little bit. Listen, I've made it no secret that I just have a fear about this Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice. It's something about the way it's done, the way it's being put together, kind of willy-nilly. It's coming off like Ant-Man to me. I think Daryl mentioned this last time we were on air. It comes off, you know, when things aren't done methodically. We see when Marvel produces or creates a project and is done very methodically for the most part, excluding Ant-Man, these movies turn out to be mint. Everyone is happy, more or less. But he does bring up a point. I want to bring this to Daryl. Do you think that Jason Momoa is miscast as Aquaman? Or it is? I mean, he has the physical presence, obviously, but I don't know. Now that I think about it, He could look a lot more like Namor than the blonde-haired Aquaman that we're familiar with.
Yeah, it's a good point. He does fit the Namor type more. But his personality for Stargate fans and people that have seen his work, his personality can fit Aquaman. The problem is, here it is again. The main problem I've had with this project, since it's been speculated about, is the speculation, all right? They keep on throwing out stuff. Should they be in pre-production now? Shouldn't they have an idea of what they're doing? You know, should that be the case? You know, when you're in pre-production, all of these ideas that just get thrown out there, shouldn't really you're just throwing. We're going to just keep on throwing. We're throwing ideas. We're seeing what's going to stick to the wall. We're going to see what's going to stick to the wall. Meanwhile, you're talking a big game about challenging Marvel. And here's our big plan. And we got Shazam. We got a Wonder Woman movie planned. We're going to try to do Suicide Squad. We're going to try to do this. We're going to try to do that. Talk is cheap. Get something down. Get some work done. All right now I got is a picture of Ben Affleck standing next to a semi-half a Batmobile. That's cool. That's real cool. All right? The problem with that is that doesn't sustain a rivalry, and that doesn't sustain success in the box office. Something you need to reestablish with something other than Batman. Warner Brothers, wake up. You know, Marvel's making mistakes on the Ant-Man thing, all right? But the problem is, here's the main problem for you, Warner Brothers. At least Marvel Studios has a big, big cushion in terms of these other characters that they can land on. What does DC, outside of Batman, what you got, Man of Steel? Did we cut Man of Steel to shreds here? Even though we liked it, we cut that to shreds. And how DC undercut themselves by not wanting to put Superman in the title? Enough said. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Can I say something briefly?
Sure.
You see, to this point, it looks like Marvel likes to do their work via Picasso-type style. That's what it looks like, the way that they like to go. And we know these type of paintings can go for millions and millions of dollars. DC with this, they're painting too. But we know what kind of painting that they're doing. It's called finger painting. It's not Picasso type of work. And that's what it looks like you're doing. Have you ever seen kids do finger painting and then they bring it home and you go, oh, and you hug the kid, oh, thank you. But really, in your mind, you know, you're thinking, this is a piece of garbage, but you can't tell the kid that. Can't tell the kid that. Oh, this is nice. Hey, keep up the good work. Finger paint versus Picasso. That's what it looks like right now to me. Hopefully, they'll straighten up. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Wait, how can you finger paint with a sporadic? Anyway, go ahead, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, and I'm also thinking there's a rumor that the Lex Luthor character is going to have hair. So not only is he a younger, weird businessman, but he's going to have hair unless he's going to be an Alexander. I mean, this is being really ultra nerdy. But there's an alternate, well, Daryl knows this, an alternate Lex Luthor that does have hair, and he's Alexander Luthor. But, again, this whole thing seems like a mess. And I would be more giving, honestly, more giving, if I felt that Zack Snyder was the auteur that Christopher Nolan is. If in the hands of a Christopher Nolan, I would say, you know what? Whatever he's doing, he has a track record. I'm going to let this fly. I'm going to trust in the filmmaker. I don't really trust Zack Snyder. I just don't. He's been hit or miss. He did a great job, I thought, and it's still debatable with some people, but I thought he did an excellent job with Watchmen, considering how heavy a work that was. I mean, that pretty much was the book. That's another thing, too. R-rated movie, a definite love letter to the fans of The Watchmen. He stayed on script on that. This one, he's all over the place. He's all over the place. So I'm not comfortable. I will agree with Q-Storm that I think that Momoa, you know, he's going to have a different look, obviously, I think. He's going to be a darker-hued, you know, less Aryan-looking Aquaman. It is what it is. All right.
But if done right, he could command the screen. He could command the presence. The problem is we don't trust him to do anything right. That's the problem. We in trouble. Back to you, Afternoon.
Well, listen, I doubt that because it looks like this is just going to be a walk-on. You forget that there's Cyborg, Wonder Woman, I guess the Green Lantern. I mean, you know, there's going to be so many people. I mean, we don't know what this is going to be. I mean, it says, well, it says Dawn of Justice, so it's certainly going to be some kind of precursor to a Justice League. It's going to be a setup for that. But if it's just going to be a walk-on, I mean, he's just going to show his face and then, you know, wait till Justice League appearing in 2017. I mean, you know, that's what I believe.
Well, you know what? We could have did this in the Man of Steel movie. I believe I got to give credit to Captain Kirk because he capitalized on one of my ideas for Dark Knight Rises or Dark Knight Returns, one of them. The one where he was sitting on top, because he said it. You saw the LexCorp satellite and you saw the fight happening. You could have blipped to different places where these heroes were and show them for, like, brief seconds looking at the fight, showing that it's being broadcast internationally. And then in this movie, you have a couple of them making appearances. Right now, I've heard, like, 9 heroes appearing in this thing. Look, just scratch Batman, Superman out of the title, please. Just call it Dawn.
Yeah, well, listen, Daryl, you know, the ultimate thing for me is that this thing... We've been talking forever about this being just a piecemeal project. But I just don't see how this is going to work compared to how Marvel does things. You know, Marvel sets it up as a plan. You know, if you plan to fail, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. That's what it does. So maybe he will come out with something and surprise me. I'd like to be surprised on this one, but, man. And I'll tell you the main thing, too, the main motivating factor, because you're asking, like, why is this stuff not being considered, it's because of the money. Man of Steel made moderate money, but it did not make Captain America money. It did not make Iron Man money. So now, after the fact, they say, oh, wow, we're going to have to reconsider this. I mean, it's dummies.
Just think about what you just said. Just think about what you just said. Captain, you'll catch on to this real quick. If this was the 80s, if this was the 90s, and you said a Superman movie wasn't going to make as much as Captain America or Iron Man, how many comic shops would we be thrown out of?
That's true.
I mean, listen,
that's a good
how
point.
Bad Warner
actually,
Brothers messed this up.
Actually, that's a great point.
I mean,
Don't be surprised if this movie gets scrapped.
Oh, God.
Don't be surprised.
Wait, how much did Man of Steel make again? You guys got the computers nearby ready?
I remember. It's like $660 million.
All right. If Guardians of the Galaxy makes a quarter of that, if it makes a quarter of that in the first 3 weeks, I'm going to give it a quarter of that. I'm not going to say it's going to surpass it, but if it makes a quarter of that in the first 3 weeks, that should be a big, big warning sign for everybody because, remember, these are relative unknowns with Guardians of the Galaxy. But Marvel has done the work putting the thing in. And remember, they just went with it. We didn't hear all of this speculation with it. They just went with it. It's following their plan. May it hiccup? Sure, it could always hiccup. But that's Superman. Superman has whole towns named after him in tribute of him. And it made $660 million. You know, if Guardians pulls down, okay, well, one quarter I expect, a third. If it pulls down 220 in the first 3 weeks, good luck. Good luck, Warner Brothers, because you've screwed the pooch.
You make a very valid point. Very valid point. But let's not, $660 million is not pennies. It's still a lot of money. It's just that when Marvel comes, they're hitting a home run almost every time. That's just what it is. You're doing good, you know. You got a double, maybe a triple. Other than Batman, Batman is a home run. That's a whole other story. But, you know, let's not discount it.
Well, listen, The reality is that as much as fans of these movies that we may be, this is a financial endeavor, purely. We're talking about actuaries, we're talking about underwriters, and they have to look at the books and say, wait a minute, you know, this isn't supposed to be what we, you know, they have certain expectations. Now, Superman, like Darryl said, it's supposed to really be a billion-dollar franchise, not unlike Batman. Superman has been losing. So it's an afterthought now that they're going to have to reconsider bringing in all these other heroes, and really they've been fighting not to be like Marvel, but they certainly want to have Marvel-like money. So that's what's really going on. That's been going on like that for a minute. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you know, we'll see how it turns out. We'll be there. I just think this thing's going to suck royally, personally. All right.
And you were the positive one about this. That's the whole thing. Their mishandling has turned you against the project now.
Well, you're getting fed information, and it's just everything is just coming out wrong. Lex Luthor has hair. He's younger. You have a Gal Gadot that doesn't really give me the physical presence of a Wonder Woman.
Give credit to Q Storm.
Yeah.
The Gal Gadot thing, I was all set with Gal Gadot, and Q found that picture of Linda Carter's daughter. Uh-oh.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Let's move things along a little bit, gentlemen. There was actually two articles, I believe, both of actually from bleedingcool.com, excellent website, bleedingcool.com. And I want to combine both of them together because they really deal with the issue of diversity, which is a common theme on this show. The first one deals with writer Gail Simone, who is making moves because she was speaking at the White House recently, and she was speaking about the representation of disabled people as well as LGBTQ folk in the comic book genre. So she's coming at it from that angle. And then there are some gentlemen who I would consider to be British blurreds, shouting out our fan base out there in England. And there's one quick thing that comes out of this thing. I'm going to put the link to the article for the British blurreds. And it says, the only normal people are white people. talking Wally West, Miles Morales, Nick Fury, and Johnny Storm on London TV. So I'm going to put this link in the chat room. And I saw the actual video footage. There's video footage of the gentleman I'm talking about, these blurreds. Actually, they're comic book makers, comic book creators. There's a UK fanzine or UK comic book. Are you familiar with this magazine called Skank, Darryl?
Yeah, the articles are hit or miss with me, but I get the points.
Yeah, so I'm looking at these British dudes really good lay in, and it's pretty cool to hear people across the pond have the same complaints because, you know, listen, they're being fed the same entertainment that we are for the most part. And they were talking about the great Dwayne McDuffie, who we were fortunate enough to interview before his death. And they were just saying that, you know, this whole deal of just replacing characters. I mean, we've gone through this whole thing on the show. We have, I think, a difference of opinion. But the way these guys attacked it, well, they thought that, you know, listen, they were looking for the ginger Wally West. Why not just create a black character that's just a separate character, like a separate guy or gal, instead of just you moving race like a chess piece. What are your thoughts about what they're saying? Now, this is across the pond, and also I didn't even really think about having disabled people. I mean, I guess the most famous disabled person, hero, is Daredevil, and that was done 45 years ago.
But then you would say the second most famous is Barbara Gordon. That leads into what DC's problem is. All right? We brought it up. I yelled about it here in the New 52. They picked and chose how they were going to reformat the company. We picked this. We picked that. We're going to change this one arbitrarily. We're going to change that one arbitrarily. Like, there's no plan behind it. There wasn't a plan behind it. We're going to change everything, but you know what? The Green Lantern and Batman universes are going to remain the same. Wait, no, they won't. All of a sudden, Barbara Gordon's going to be able to walk again. And Green Lantern, well, they have their own rules out there, except we're going to change the whole way every Green Lantern is interacting with the Justice League since we're reforming the Justice League or reformatting the Justice League. You know, screw, we're throwing everything out, all right? Now, again, compared to how the other comic book companies deal with race, DC has got a long way to go still. That's not saying that the other companies are perfect, all right? There was a great article, I think, in Robot 6 the other day talking about this, where... Or, you know what? It wasn't just Robot 6. I got to go back to our guy, Joseph Illich, and his color barrier talking about this. You can't just color a white person black or make a white person Asian or make a white person Latino or make a white person Arab and say, well, there you go. There's your character. No. You got to handle it with some aplomb, okay? What was the name of the Arab American Green Lantern?
Baz.
Simon Baz, okay?
Right.
For as much, and you remember, I had misgivings about that character, about the way they portrayed him before they actually did the story, because for them to sensationalize it, the first thing you see is him holding a gun. What Green Lantern holds a gun? But then, when you got the story and everything, it made sense. The problem is the stereotypes in the media and out there, you see an Arab American Green Lantern holding a gun. DC doesn't understand that they are so far behind the eight ball when it comes to race relations, when it comes to relations with women. Hey, they coined the term women in refrigerators. Let's remember this, folks, all right? Hey, they coined what's the line called? Super dickery about Lois Lane's treatment at the hands of Superman during the 50s, you know? All it is coined from stuff you guys did, you know? And then now we're getting into race, and let's remember some of the racial sidekicks that DC's had, you know? When you have that much of an eight ball that you are behind, okay? And to her credit, Gail Simone has done a great job writing female characters, writing colored characters, writing characters of disabled qualities, trying to work in lesbian and gay relationships in the books, to the point where she's been blocked on some stuff by DC, all right? But she has found a way to incorporate that in her works. The only misstep I've seen with her is that, she let the Barbara Gordon thing slide. Barbara Gordon should never have been able to walk again. I'm sorry to say it that way. But to me, that was much of an affront as making Amanda Waller thin and pretty. That away, you change the character. You take that away, you change part of the motivation. Now, you just arbitrarily make Wally West black. What's the motivation here? Did you do any setup? We're going to just make him black. And in breaking news, Donna Troy is going to be Asian. Starfire didn't come from outer space. She came from Compton.
You're joking, Robin, right?
Well,
anyway,
the new Robin's
going
to be a Martian.
Okay, you're joking, I see.
Yes. You actually thought I was serious? But that's as much thought as they put into these things.
Yeah, you know. You never know.
Hey, if this stuff happens, I'm on tape. It's what? June 21st. You've heard it here first. If these things appear in print, it's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And you know what? We've talked about our groups getting together and forming something and getting together and doing something. See, again, Marvel is not perfect with this. God knows they use the same stereotypes also. The problem is with Marvel, you could see how they build up their characters. No character is just thrown in there willy-nilly. No character is all of a sudden just changed, except for the Black Punisher one, and we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, that was horrible.
You know, you see, but they have their missteps too. Night Thrasher, but they have their missteps too. But at the same time, they still have a better record than DC. Except in X-Men, because they just can't have a strong Black X-Men character that's not named Storm.
All right, listen, let's go to a quick groove. When we get back, I want to talk more about this. I'll leave the audience with this. You know, with the Gail Simone's appearance at the White House, one of the mantras that came out of it from the Twitterverse, one of the things that came out was, stop thinking about who might be turned off, thinking about who might be turned on. That's something that I think Gail Simone actually said at the White House. So you have people that are certainly trying to push a certain agenda. Listen, anything that brings us a little close to reality and better writing, I support them. I will disagree with Daryl one thing. I really appreciate that Amanda Waller is a thin, attractive Black woman. That heavy, I never got that character because I said, you know, this is fulfilling a certain mammy trope. Maybe it would have been more advantageous if they saw her losing the weight, getting in shape, you know, really like transforming instead of just, okay, she's just thin. I can appreciate that. I think maybe that would have been more interesting if she just changed her appearance and you saw that change. Some kind of heavy, intense program, physical fitness. You know, like what Batman did. You saw Batman. You saw his mythology is that he's a self-made man. Maybe that would have been more interesting for Amanda Waller. All right, let's go to a quick groove. About 2 minutes, we'll be back. More Gail Simone, more of these blurs from England. And also, I want to throw John Byrne in the mix. He's lighting up the stage also, so we'll be right back. This is Superman Lover, D'Angelo. We'll be right back. now, that was the great D'Angelo, who we're crossing our fingers. We're hearing that he's supposed to be releasing a new album this year. His management says that. So we will see. We will see. Of course, he's covering the great Johnny Guitar Watson, Superman Lover. We're back, folks. This is The Grindhouse, the comic shop portion of the show. Before the break, we were talking about Gail Simone, writer Gail Simone, appearing at the White House. And one of the mantras that came out of the White House was her saying, stop thinking about who might be turned off and start thinking about who might be turned on. I'm looking at some of these tweets that were in response to Gail being at this White House function, White House forum, I should say. And you have some radical people that are really – I wish we saw more of this when it came to minority representation, because now we're really talking about LGBTs and disabled folk. So I'm looking at one of the I'm going to read a few of these tweets to tell you, like, the radicalism and the passion that these people have. Alyssa Rosenberg, at Gail Simone, she's tweeting at Gail Simone, saying, Gail Simone reminds us that progress in comics required the industry to learn to disregard bogus boycott threats. Gail Simone reminds us that the Comics Code led Pyres and Zombies in 1971, but it took until 1989 to admit LGBT folks. Same person says, this is an audience that has supported us for years. Why don't we start supporting them back? Oh, and one more thing. This is from Lydia Brown. She, toward Ms. Simone. She says, Gail Simone says threats were empty. No one stopped reading Batman because Batwoman kisses girls. I don't know. That's pretty deep. Now, there's been some controversy with John Byrne over the years. I was on John Byrne's art. Loved his art. But in the last couple of years, he seems to be a little off-putting. I'm not really sure how I feel about certain things. But there's a piece that's out there. I think it might have been from let's see, it might still be Bleeding Cool. No, Comic Book Movies. Comicbookmovies.com unpacks on John Byrne explaining why race bending doesn't help. Now, usually this is the guy that I think Daryl could attest to this. He's usually not the most astute person when it comes to race matters. I think he's put his foot in his mouth on a few occasions. What about race bending? I think it's a rather lengthy article. I think he might be onto something. Now, also, Q-Storm submitted a question to you, Daryl, and he was saying, shouldn't what you were saying about what's happening in print, shouldn't that apply to the cinematic Human Torch as well? What do you say about that? I think I have his mic. Sorry about that.
You could say that. It would be a very good point, all right? But here's the thing. At least Marvel sprinkles in black characters where they can, all right? With the Human Torch, they just did a storyline with an alternate universe, Fantastic Four, that was multiracial. They show you these possibilities. This is a normal thing for them. And the Council of Reeds they had with Hickman, they showed you this. You know, they open up infinite possibilities where A, the baseline universe is this way, but we have other universes that are changed. That is saying that the Fantastic Four movie is going to be the baseline universe. The problem is they don't have control over the movie. Everybody would feel much better about this movie and about a Black Human Torch if it was under the Marvel Studios umbrella and someone like John Favreau was handling it. Someone like Josh Whedon was handling it. We know this guy from Chronicle. Yes, he's handled Mr. Jordan, and he's handled this type of story somewhat. But the more you read about it, the more that's lacking a Marvel oversight on it. And at the same time, and I told you this, and you went against me when you were like, but they hired Mark Millar. I went, he's responsible for a couple of the worst Fantastic Four stories in the last 10 years. I don't like his writing. He's one of the most off-color, insensitive writers in comics today. People love his big screen stuff, but all the time, and I'm on record saying it, all the time, you're loving that, look at how minorities and women and people of alternate lifestyles are treated in his books. You love Hit Girl. You love Kick-Ass. You love them. That's great. You love them. Take a look at how minorities were treated in those. Come back to me. And that's the guy behind overseeing Fantastic Four when you're making a big change like this. Do your homework. That's all I say. Do your homework. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Captain, any thoughts?
Well, let me tell you. All right. I'm so not about changing the characters from their inception. I'm so not that guy. Reason being, let's look at, and this is a movie screen thing, and I'll bring it back to comic books. Let's look at Cleopatra, all right? According to Hollywood, originally Cleopatra was white. According to Hollywood, you get all the observers, that's the people watching the screen. According to the Copenhagen interpretation, the observer creates the reality. So all of you watching, turn around and say Cleopatra is white. White people thought Cleopatra was white, and the black people who did not do their history, did not have fathers to give them black history, did not take black history in college, those sort of things, they thought the same thing too. Why? Because their observer creates the quantum wave, collapses the quantum wave function. That's why. So you create a reality. Simply put, you create a reality, whether that's true or not. And it wasn't true. We all know Cleopatra wasn't white. The same thing happens with these comic books. Black Panther, right? If Black Panther goes on the screen, and all of a sudden, if they just wanted to make fun of it and just say, all right, it's Black Panther, but let's use a white guy, and let's make Wakanda white and put it on the screen, all the liberals go crazy, all the black people go crazy, but it's still called Black Panther. If we took a movie about Shaka Zulu and we made them all white, all the liberals will go crazy, and all the black people will go crazy. Absolutely. Because look at the reality that it's creating. It's not a true reality in no way, shape, or form. You see, so I'm so much not for that. And I get it where comic books make alternative reality. And then if you wanted to put it out far as movies are concerned, you could turn back and say, well, we had the original. But the audience is not that smart, the pop audience. They're not. You put something out there on the screen like that, that becomes the reality from their perspective. So simply put, you need black characters from the inception. You need white characters from the inception. You need Asian characters from the inception and women and everything else. That's what you need. Because right now we're underneath multiculturalism, and that's what we're doing. So it's multiculturalism. Everyone needs representation. That's where I am. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd.
Yeah, you know, we never actually spoke about Hieroglyph. Hieroglyph is by Fox coming up. I guess it's supposed to kind of sort of remind you of Sleepy Hollow in a way. It's kind of working on that same kind of fantasy thing, except that we're talking about Egypt. And it has a multiracial cast, but no Egyptians. I mean, really? I mean, you have Egyptian actors.
Well, hold on, though. You know that's a long ploy they've been doing because they want to take Egypt, the foundation of all everything here. In the, you have pyramids that they cannot build today. They like to take it out of Africa. They say, oh, I'm Egyptian. You know, oh, I'm Egyptian. No, you're African. No, I'm Egyptian. You know, that's the game they like to play. Play that game, you know. So that's just running along the same game they've been playing for years. Black people, Egypt, that's the reality of it. That's all.
It amazes me that, you know, right before the broadcast, there was an article, I think, from Yahoo that was talking about the, I think, 20 or so most expensive movies ever made. And in today's monies, Cleopatra was one of them. Came out in the early 60s, starred Elizabeth Taylor, who had $1 million salary for that time. $1 million in 1960 is like $10 million or $20 million today. It's astronomical. And it was legendary as to how much money was spent on that film. And we see Elizabeth Taylor as an Egyptian woman. It was, now we're talking about literally 50-plus years later, and we're still playing these stupid games. Still. With a black president. I mean, it's embarrassing at this point. I don't get it. Moving things along a little bit, I want to talk about, I'm very pleased. See, at least the feelings I have towards Netflix and Daredevil are radically different than Superman. You have Vincent D'Onofrio from Law and Order. And what was the film he was in, the film with dealing with way back? The Vietnam War, where he went crazy. I can't remember right now. Anyway, it's an incredible film. I can't think. Somebody from the chat will probably remind
the
me.
The one with Sean Penn? Oh, Michael J. Fox? That one? No, Michael J. Fox. One way you went crazy. Forget it. I'll just go Men in Black and end it right there. Men in Black.
Anyway, we heard that he's attached to this project as the Kingpin. And now there's talk about Rosario Dawson coming in. Now, we know at heart she's a comic book geek. She likes this stuff. She had her own comic book. She's into this culture. But here we go. Are we expecting an Afro-Latina to play a Greek woman? I don't know. They didn't say she's going to be Elektra, but who else could she be?
Typhoid Mary.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what's her ethnicity?
No, I'm just telling you, Typhoid Mary. They've already changed the villain into a black guy in the first one, okay? This would follow suit that they would change his number two assassin in Typhoid Mary into her. Because, remember, we've heard all about Daredevil, but if you speak the name Elektra, everybody backs away. That's how bad that movie was. So they may elevate and make Rosario Dawson make her Typhoid Mary. Or, here's a long shot, and this is where people will get mad, they may make her Miss Page, his long girlfriend who got into porn, ended up with AIDS, got killed by Bullseye. Or, let's go cross-racial, make her Bullseye. We do have that Lady Bullseye, right?
That's true.
You know, so don't just assume it's going to be Elektra.
She's such a big name actress, though. We'll see. Incidentally, thank you for Q Storm and Ja. Full Metal Jacket. Full Metal Jacket is that film. Excellent film. Cap. Oh,
well,
you know, other thing, Nathan Fillion has been put in the mix as Nova, or a Nova, for the Guardians of the Galaxy film. And some people, the comic verse loves him, but he might be too old to play Rich Rider, if that's who he's going to be. I'm just putting it out there. Any thoughts, Captain?
I like him for the part. I actually like him for the part, as far as I'm concerned. I actually like him for the part. I think he can pull it off. You know, the Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be rather interesting because, Marvel is going in an entirely different direction from their previous movies. Let's see what happens with it. Let's keep our fingers crossed. And even if they drop the ball, as some people said, that I spoke to, they said, hey, they may drop the ball on this. And I said, you don't know that. They can afford to take the hit because they're doing so well. You know, if you're batting 700 and you come to the plate and you strike out one time, big deal. So what? You know, that's the reality of it.
And just think about it. Dropping the ball now means, oh, it only made $195 million. That's how high Marvel set the curve. Yeah, we spent, I think, $120 million on production of this, and its budget is $150. So if it only makes $195, $200, it kind of dropped the ball. This is
I would say, all right, if it's $150 and they probably spent another $75 million as far as promotion, which they never talk about. They never talk about that. So you're dealing with that. So let's say dropping the ball, you made $300 million, all right? You're gross. That's dropping the ball. The movie does $400 million gross. It's a plus. It's just not Marvel crazy numbers, but it's a plus. That's just what it is. Let's be honest, man. And I could see this movie easily doing $400, $450 million. No problem. No problem.
And again, how much did Man of Steel make? $660 million. Sorry, Afro Nerd, I couldn't resist.
Yeah, I will say I am curious about what Guardians of the Galaxy will pull in, because it's such a niche kind of movie. I mean, you know, it's another potential space opera, very reminiscent of Star Wars. I guess Marvel's take on the Star Wars. Marvel goes cosmic. No Silver Surfer, unfortunately. Maybe I think that we might see a Adam Warlock in some way. That might be interesting. I don't know what to expect in this thing. I have no idea. It looks pretty good from what I see, but I'm just wondering if it will definitely imprint Marvel. This will be the test for Marvel more so than any other film. Because if this movie makes a lot of money or decent money and it's a really so lesser known, then people have just bought into Marvel, to the Marvel brand more wholeheartedly. They're saying that we don't care what it is as long as Marvel puts it up out there. So I'm really hoping that it does well. But I can't get a read on this thing. Have you been hearing anything about this, Darryl? Like usually they give you a read. They test this with audience. They can kind of – they got this down to a science. They can pretty much tell you how this thing is going to go down.
And, again, that's showing me, A, they're totally confident in it, that it's going to do – it's not going to surpass Avengers. It's not going to surpass Captain America, but it's going to do – they feel it's going to do well enough to warm people's appetites for what's coming later. Because all this is the leadoff hitter right here. Well, technically, the end of Avengers was the leadoff. And Captain America hit a single with the last frame, and this one is really the middle of the order right here, setting it up for the power hitter that's coming up, Avengers 2. So
I tell you what, if it does $600 million gross, DC don't even turn the screen on. Don't even turn your screen on, man. Game over. That's it. Don't even turn your screen. Don't even bother. Just shelf your product, man. Shelf it. Do something else.
But I will say this. At Eternal Con, which you went to, I talked to people that went there. I went to special edition on Comic-Con on Saturday, and I know people are in the Philly Con this week. The big talk has been, what the heck to expect from this? It's true that Captain America is going up against Batman and Superman. Is this really their plans? People, we may dismiss it, but people in our world are talking about it. The problem is DC is doing a lot of the talking themselves instead of putting stuff down. I can't reiterate that enough. They need to put stuff down so that people are assured. Because, you know, there are a lot of Bat fans that are not liking this project, mainly because of Affleck, but more because they had a sense of a plan with Nolan. They don't have a sense of a plan here. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. And you know something else? I'm led to believe that this Netflix Daredevil is going to also potentially have a big screen kind of thing. I mean, they seem not to, Marvel seems not to make that distinction between small screen and big screen. What about that? Like, we're, you know, no one talks about this, but so far Marvel, you know, they just talk about this Netflix. There may be some connection with what's happening at S.H.I.E.L.D. So that must mean that this Daredevil could be the Daredevil we see on the big screen.
Boy, these, no problem. We want to make it all intertwined, right? Let me show up in a couple of these series. And I haven't heard anybody from Marvel Studios and Netflix say, nah, man, just stick with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All I heard is, we're glad he's showing such enthusiasm over this. You remember the last time you heard that? We're glad he's showing such enthusiasm over this. Was when Chris Evans said, hey, I can do Captain America. And everybody in the Nerdverse is like, but you're Human Torch. Now, can we see anybody else as Captain America?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. All right, listen, we got less than a minute, gentlemen. I think we're going to have to close the shop. I did not get a chance to talk about my experience at Eternal Con. Just for the listening audience, it's a Long Island comic convention. The second annual one was last week. And, it, you know, listen, it pales in comparison to San Diego or the New York Comic Con. But it does tell you that the genre is growing. And they had to basically, I believe, rent out more space. I mean, this comic book thing is just not going away. And you see women there. Because I've gone to Long Island comic conventions before when I was a kid. And it was myself and Mr. Starks, and we were flies in milk with a whole bunch of old, dusty comics around us. This time out, even the Eternal Con is somewhat of a spectacle. They have writers there. They have, they have props. It's a big to-do. So I guess things are just going to be bigger and brighter in the future, hopefully. But the New York Comic Con, Daryl, there's going to be a week-long thing in the city, even leading up to Comic Con.
Yeah,
is that true?
There's going to be a superhero dress day. There's going to be. Let's put it this way: the last year left an impression that New York thinks they could get away with doing a whole week of events. This city can't spend money fast enough, but they're sparing some for us. I know guys who attended both the Special Edition Con and then hopped on the LIRR out to the Eternal Con, and they said, this was great. It was like a Subway series for nerds. I was like, you know what? You had fun. You got to see both. We'll see what happens come October. But that's the type of passion we're going to need if you're going to survive a week of this, a week of this. Just think about that. Again, late 90s. Today, we're going to have a whole week devoted to superheroes. See how fast you get thrown out of the comic shop.
All right, folks. Listen, Daryl, as always, we appreciate your support. We're going next door to do After Earth featuring Captain Kirk. It's been real. We'll do it again next week.
Spot with a beard?
I think not.
Rivetti, what's up?
I'm sorry, sir. It's just a difference of opinion that got out of hand.
What about?
It's really too silly to talk about, sir. I'd rather just forget about it.
I don't give a damn about what you'd rather forget about. Why were you two fighting?
Well, I said that the Kirby Silver Surfer was the only real Silver Surfer, and that the Mobius Silver Surfer was shit. And Benefield's a big Mobius fan, and things got out of hand. I pushed him, he pushed me. I lost my head, sir. I'm sorry.
Rivetti, you're a supervisor. You can get a commission like that.
I know it, sir. You're 100% right. It's never happened again,
It better not happen again. I see this kind of nonsense, I'm going to write you up. You understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
You have to set an example even in the face of stupidity. Now, everybody that reads comic books knows that Kirby Silver Surfer is the only true Silver Surfer. Now, am I right or wrong?
You're right, sir.
All right. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Once again, I want to thank the uncanny Daryl B for stopping by for the Comic Shop Show. Folks, always check us out Saturdays, The Grindhouse, 6 p.m. Now, of course, we have the second half, which is Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. We have a lot to get into, folks. I have to get into this idiocy with Jeremy Meeks. Now, you may ask, who is this person? Now, I hate to say that now his name is embedded. And I know that when that happens, there's a lot of minstrelsy, coonery, and tomfoolery coming forward. Trust me on that. So we'll talk about it. And it really, I'll just say this briefly, it saddens me as to what the culture has really, how it has really degraded. This particular story will show that we've really become vapid, self-absorbed people. I'm not talking about black people, I'm talking about just people. The culture sucks, ladies and gentlemen. Purely so. Anyway, on that note, happy times. Let's go to an urban alternative groove. Black rock, psychedelic soul, progressive hip-hop. This is Outkast, Morris Brown. Yeah, you know what Morris Brown is. Morris Brown, Outkast, we'll be right back. Let's groove.
You like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, fast, fast.
Brand new Cadillac, beating like
some leader. Sharp as a tack, like I just left church. Walked in attack when the shit won't work me. Everybody wanna know what's really going on. Is you and Drew Dow still making songs, so on and so on. I can go on and on and on and on and on. Hell yes.
Music makes the world go round. Where it goes,
where it goes,
you just don't know.
My heart is like a marching band.
Boys in the Cadillac seal. Cast with a crown on your Cadillac feel. I make your wheels of steel stand like your DJ got killed. A fire marshal.
Shut it down.
Time to go. Outcast royalty by design of logo. Wanna count it out loud?
93, 94, 95, 96.
Plus a dime, so that's five. Hot like the perm on the back of your neck. Left it in too long. Now you got cabbage patch. Silky. In the corners like a crowbar, oh so unique. Got the pedal to the floor, but the photo just creep.
Ride, creep. Cadillac, like the game.
about it. Melodies, yep, we got it funky for the funk of it. And everybody want it. You make a nigga put a dog on it.
You make a nigga put a dog on it.
Music makes the world go.
Outkast, folks, you know they're an Atlanta-based group, so it seems apropos that they would do a song that is homage to Morris Brown College. And ironically, it appears that, you know, I might have even discussed this on a show quite a few shows ago, that Morris Brown was having financial problems, and it appears that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that the Atlanta Economic Development Agency just this past Thursday voted to purchasing Morris Brown College. A day after a bankruptcy judge allowed the school to sell, basically gave the school the ability to sell. So, you know, Morris Brown is a historical black college. I would have hated to see it go. So it looks like there's some kind of light at the end of the tunnel post-bankruptcy. This is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Where is he? Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Okay, let's talk about how filth can go from nothing to something via the internet. It's on you, Sir Afflener. Take it. Take the floor, sir.
Yeah, listen, I was hesitant to even talk about this, but it falls in line with what we're about here on the show, that we have a cultural malaise. We have a cultural decline. There's a young man by the name of Jeremy Meeks that is a criminal. I mean, a hardcore thug. Alleged gangbanger. Alleged gun runner. He did 9 years in prison. He's only 30. Only 30. He already did nine, he already did almost a decade. And you're just 30. So anyway, there's a Facebook page. This guy's out of California, that shows mugshots of criminals. I think it's used by the police department for, I guess, identification purposes mainly. So he took a mugshot. Again, we're forgetting that this was a mugshot. But the women, or a number of women, are enamored with this young man. And some of the tweets or the Facebook comments are, you know, he can come in my house. If he's robbing my house, I'd make him forget about robbing my house in 30 seconds. I mean, really? Really? I don't get it. But the fact that we're willing to excuse this kind of stuff, and actually, we saw this before, maybe a year ago, with a woman that was found out to be a Russian spy. But she was considered to be an attractive Russian spy. And I knew already that there was a way, I think she was deported, but there was a way they were going to make this woman be palatable. That's okay. They're talking too much about this woman's physical appeal, but she's a spy. And yet, matter of fact, she's still talked about here and there, a year and a half later, where you could see people would like to excuse what she has done, because she's good-looking. We saw the young man with the Boston bombing thing. He, too, was considered attractive, and there were women ready to come to his defense and say he really didn't do this. And Rolling Stone, if I remember correctly, put him on the cover, and people were saying, listen, the cover made it seem like he was some kind of rock god. This guy killed people. I mean, in a really heinous way. Heinous. So let me play this clip first. Actually, I have two clips. The second clip I'm going to play because I want you to hear how the male talk show host goes in on his female colleagues. He goes in. So let's go to the first one and then the second one. Hold on, folks. More tomfoolery.
There's been a lot of discussion over this next story. In fact, some don't think it's a story at all. We're talking about a convicted felon who's getting a lot of attention. This is Jeremy Meeks. He was arrested yesterday and famous on social media today because of his looks. The Stockton Police Department arrested several gang members in a roundup and posted their mugshots to Facebook. What they weren't expecting was Jeremy's mug to become famous. News 10's Nick Monticelli talked to Meeks in jail.
And they found a pistol in my trunk.
Stockton police arrested four yesterday in a gang roundup. It was great police work, but the only attention police are getting is on their Facebook page for Jeremy Meeks.
I just visited my wife, and she said that I blew up all over Facebook.
All over Facebook and all over the world. On Stockton's page, more than 24,000 likes and more than 6,000 comments. Vanessa Vieira writing, if this guy broke into my house, I'd make him forget why he broke in within 30 seconds. Laugh out loud. Lady Santiago, I'd got 50 shades on that man. Oh, God, yes. TMZ has jumped on the hot convict bandwagon, as well as media outlets nationwide. But not everyone agrees. For instance, Lisa McAllister says, criminals aren't sexy. Real men work, and ladies don't fawn over criminal trash. Have some self-respect. The criminal himself didn't know why he was so popular until I told him.
Well, I appreciate that, but I just want them to know that this is really not me. Like, I'm not some kingpin.
And that is the only reason Meeks agreed to the interview, to tell people his side of the story, saying even though he's being charged with street terrorism, he is no longer a gangster. The Stockton Police Department has also noticed what's happening online and is reminding people Jeremy is a felon, allegedly caught with a gun, and he spent 9 years in prison for grand theft.
Well, it's a mugshot, so...
And away from the computer and on the streets of Stockton, nobody is going crazy for baby blue eyes. Is he cute?
No. So that's a lot of people, not me. He's too thug for me.
I asked Jeremy about that teardrop on the side of his face, and he simply said he's done some things in his past he is not proud of. And that kind of brings up the main point of this conversation. We never want to glorify or put people like this in the news for reasons like this, but a lot of you are talking about it online. And for those of you who are doing it, we kind of wag the finger of shame at you. We never want to put these people on a pedestal. Dale, Christina?
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, but I am kind of curious. I mean, you told him what was happening. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. Recidivism is so high among ex-convicts. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it'll motivate him to do something other with his life.
He promised me that he was setting his life back on track, that he's got a wife and a son now, and he's never going to go back into gang life again. So at this point, all we can do is cross our fingers and see what happens.
You know, and you never know who's seeing the story. Maybe somebody out there, a photographer or company, will give him a shot at doing a little male modeling.
There you go. He's got a career in front of him, right?
Make some legitimate. Yeah. Work. All right. Thank
yeah,
you.
I got the blue eyes. I mean, if I had the puffy lips and the neck tattoo, I could.
No tattoos on you, Dale.
Yeah, as long as it said News 10. Or maybe this, our phone number.
All right. You know, someone mentioned that this was a light-complected man of color. You know, I'm not so sure of that. I mean, that probably plays a role. But let's be honest. If Tyson Beckford, who's around my complexion, was in that same lineup, I'm pretty sure this woman would say, oh, wait a minute, what do we have here? I'm not so sure. I think it's just this guy just caught the ear or the eye of a certain female fan base, and also the fact that this is Facebook. Now the part that offends me is that because of his alleged attractiveness, I'm not good at measuring male attractiveness, but because of what his perception on this guy, all of a sudden people, well, maybe he can turn his life around. What happens to the lesser attractive criminal? Why aren't people more apt to say maybe that person can turn their life around? So what it is that it's a psychological component, Captain, that attracted people that goodness is ascribed to them automatically. Like, this person just must just be a good person. But that could be solely not the case. But we that way psychologically. We ascribe goodness and a certain moral barometer. It's very strange. I've dated some very attractive women, and they were horrible human beings, Captain. You know, I mean, let's go to this next clip. It's real short, and this is actually Chris Cuomo. You recognize that surname. Chris Cuomo, the son of Mario Cuomo. He's a CNN correspondent, and he goes in on his female colleagues. That's the only reason why I taped this. Hold on.
That's being called the hottest mugshot ever, and it's taken the Internet by storm. This is Jeremy Meeks. He's a 30-year-old convicted felon. He was busted during a weapons sweep in Stockton, California this week. But his mugshot on the Stockton PD Facebook page, it has received more than 39,000 likes and more than 12,000 comments. Most are from women fawning over his good looks and chiseled features and blue eyes. But critics are reminding his adoring fans that as fine as this fella is, Meeks is a criminal who has already done time and is now facing weapons and a gang charge. He is scheduled for arraignment today. So just don't forget that.
What is it with you ladies?
Why did I know that was coming?
You know, if this...
When we say, like, the critics try to remind people that he is a criminal. It's like, no, those critics are the people that have a brain. Like,
if you flipped the script here and it was a picture of a very attractive woman who
don't
said,
generalize.
And guys
don't
were saying how hot the woman is, you guys would be
story?
Like, you see how men are, you're so superficial.
Hey, Pete, where's that mute button? You got that
here? No, it's called the truth button. And I'm pushing it, baby.
Did you hear how I told the story? Kate, was I not measured?
Not measured.
Okay, we're moving on. He wants to make an argument out of something that's not an argument.
Oh, yeah, no argument here.
You know what? We're not even losing.
Captain, he was getting into that ass, pardon my French, and that now they're scrambling. They're scrambling. What are your thoughts about this tomfoolery? We'll move along.
Well, let's be honest. You know, in life, looks do matter. Taller men, normally, not all the time, do better than short men. And we know women prefer also taller men. Taller men have a tendency to go up the economic ladder a lot faster and a lot easier. It doesn't mean if you're 5'2", you cannot do the same. But chances are it's not going to be as easy. We know this to be true, so we could say that people in general are very superficial. But now, how does this foolishness happen? We know many people go to media takeout. Many of people go to World Star Hip Hop. They have many viewers every day. Some of you listeners go there also. And you see these videos, and sometimes they're picked up by other websites, and then sometimes even major news outlets talk about this. How does this happen? Simply put, based on my last informational diatribes, what happens when you send things on the Internet? The observer collapses a quantum wave function that creates a reality. This is not spurious claims at all or anything like that. This is based on the Copenhagen interpretation that you can look up. For those of you that feel I just make things up, the captain's crazy. He's a nutter. You can look these things up. So now with this person, he was walking around in regular four-dimensional space. Women probably said he was good-looking. No problem. But I'm not going to mess with him. He ends up on the Internet. More observers, it creates a reality. Lo and behold, he's turned into an Internet star. The filth is turned into an Internet star. And let's be honest. Oh, excuse me, that's an expletive in the Zionist reality now. You cannot be honest. But let's be honest anyway. Women do favor bad boys, even though they know that they cannot be with them. People really do not follow nice guys. They just don't. They'll follow the bad boy. That's just the way it is, truth be told. So this is how this is what happens. This is what we're dealing with. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
I see our friend Q-Storm is really going off about why we're even discussing this, and he has a point. The only reason why I really, under normal circumstances, I would have ignored this story. But I felt like we should discuss it only because it talks about character. And this show is very much, it's not about Mr. Meeks. It's about the reaction to Mr. Meeks, and it's about the fact that this guy was walking around as no big deal. But once you put him on the internet, then it's like an unnatural thing happens. All of a sudden, you're somebody. And this guy's a criminal, and yet it comes off as if that doesn't matter. We're ready to excuse it. Now, being that he's a man of color, I don't know if he will be able to capitalize on this. Now, I know that if he were white, I can surmise if he were white, there might be some machinations in the background because of this guy's Q rating to get him out of jail. I have yet to really see that given to a man of color. It might just be relegated to Facebook nonsense. That's what makes it interesting for me. He has a million dollar bail. So you have to do something royally screwed up to get a $1 million bail. But these fools, women, have started a campaign to get this guy out of jail just because he's quote-unquote good-looking. What about the other Negroes and Latinos that are in prison? Why aren't you working for their release? Why aren't you getting a Kickstarter program for homeboy that may not look like this guy? It's the phoniness that I want to talk about. That's why I felt like this has to be discussed. And it talks about, again, being repetitive, the degradation of our culture. Our culture is going to hell in a handbasket, and we do have to address not Meeks, not him, but the mentality that finds this okay, that we're ready to excuse murderers, like the young man who was responsible for the Boston bombing. We're ready to excuse him because he's quote unquote good looking. I mean, that's a type of insanity. It's a type of insanity. That's it. All right. I did want to mention something that I didn't get a chance to. I think I might have had it for a couple of weeks, Captain, and we just didn't get a chance to get to it. I'm fascinated by this concept of cryptocurrency. Now, one of the things that makes it troubling is that I'm seeing constantly, Captain, and you and I go back and forth about this off air all the time. Black folks are going to have to get out of their boxes. This box. I mean, this is a repetitive argument, but I have to mention this to hone in on this. There's a story attached to this cryptocurrency thing that just completely fascinated me, and it made me think, why aren't black folk, or I'm led to believe, why aren't black folks talking about this thing? Why are we left in the dark about technology, finance, that everybody else is taking advantage of, and yet we're still rife in victimization? What am I talking about? There's a young man, 15 years of age, 15. His grandmother gives him a $1,000 gift. This young man, in turn, decides to invest in Bitcoin. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with cryptocurrency, it's a relatively new phenomenon, new bit of technology, and essentially it's data, it's a file, but money can be ascribed to this bit of data. It's essentially just exactly what it says, cryptocurrency. And I always thought in the back of my mind that this was going to come at some point. We're moving because we know, and the Catholic talks about this a lot, that what is the term you use, Captain? Fiat currency.
Yes.
We just make it, you know, we just print money. Money as itself, as far as paper representation, it's just paper. But it's not. We ascribe value to it. So if we can ascribe value to the paper dollar, it's not that far to think that we can ascribe value to data, to bits. So this kid had the foresight and the chutzpah to invest $1,000 into Bitcoin. And by the year's end, it was $100,000. And then he flipped that again into an internet business at 15. Now, when I hear these stories, it is wearing thin that we have folks that are always crying and whining about they can't make it, they don't know what to do. This 15-year-old knew what to do. I mean, really. So, Kevin, I want to get your thoughts on this because I wanted to highlight, and actually I'm working on trying to get invested in this myself. It might be too late now. But there's a number of different cryptocurrencies. And really the linchpin to maybe something being of greater value than the next cryptocurrency is the likelihood of it not being hacked. So if you're able to create a type of currency, crypto digital currency, that cannot be hacked, then that will increase the value of that currency. So there's Namecoin is one currency, Namecoin, Dogecoin, Bitcoin you know of. I mean, there's a number of currencies out here. I'm wondering, you know, again, urban radio, you're not allowed to discuss these things, but if black folk had invested in cryptocurrency or knew about it or had some awareness, but there's a perception that we're not supposed to know these things. They don't discuss it. I mean, I listen to a great deal of radio, honing my craft. I know the Catholic does as well, to see what other folks are doing. And I realize that in culturally black radio, we're not discussing things. We're not getting out of the box. As a kid made $100,000 out of a thousand, and we can't talk about this to figure out, hey, black man, black woman, what are we doing? So I had to racialize the story, Captain, to a certain degree. I had to racialize. I'm like, this is big, and it's not discussed. You go to all these websites, black culture websites, they don't talk about this stuff. No technology blogs from a black perspective. I mean, it is what it is. Captain?
Well, first, everyone has to understand the dollar and the weaknesses of the dollar. The dollar is in a state such as this. What we have is quantitative easing, which is nothing more than the powers that be printing money to pay their debts. Whatever the debt is, they just print more and print more and more and more and more. And as long as the countries and whoever they owe accept the dollar, we can go on and on and on and on. But eventually, you do have to pay the piper. You have that going. That's what's keeping up the dollar. The second thing that's keeping up the dollar is the fact that oil is traded in dollars. If these countries turn around and say, we're not accepting the dollar to be traded, you'll be on a cheese line within 3 months. All right? That's why the United States goes after these countries that turn around and say, we only want to accept gold for the oil. Next thing you know, the United States is in there uprooting them. 1, 2, 3. So your dollar is not stable at all. So because of that, these different type of currencies pop up here and there. Now, as far as them being hacked, problem is they can be hacked. That's the reality of it. Some are better than others. Computers work on binary code, 1 and 0. And because it's 1 and 0, the way they're essentially set up, they can be hacked. Now, if you watch the movie Transcendence, and we had quantum computing, where your brain works pretty much, then you have a whole different thing. And if you had a lock on that, where it's quantum computing, you have to watch the movie Transcendence to get the gist of it, or you can look it up, open source on the internet, so you can grab and see the difference between that and regular binary computing. If you had that, then you off to the market. You could invest your house and everything into it because you got it now. You got it. You become a powers that be at that given point. It's on and popping, literally, if you could do that. It have not been able to do that as of yet. So these things, they come up, they pop up, they go down. It's rather volatile, but it's very interesting at the same time. And as the great Afro nerd says, black people need to get off the bench and get in the game. You don't necessarily have to be a starter, but you need to get a little sweaty and get in the game. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Exactly. You know, I around the time that I was became aware of Bitcoin, the 50-year-old, beat me to the punch, Captain, because I was aware of Bitcoin for a little while, and now it's maybe too late. I mean, I'm going to look into getting into another type of currency, but I'm good for $5,000 or $10,000. I would have put $5,000 or $10,000 on something like that. What the hell? $10,000 is a million? In theory? Really?
Yep.
This is such a big story. I don't understand why black folks aren't talking about it. I mean, I guess I do understand, but just like someone said in the chat room, we're talking about Blue Ivy's hair. You know, please. we're Facebooking and high-fiving Negroes that are criminals because they're good looking. Benetton ad brethren. I mean, please. This is a joke. It's a joke. It is what it is. I hate to keep on saying that, but I have no explanation for some of this stuff. All right, let's go to a quick groove. Captain, when we get back, I want to talk about the Redskins losing their trademark. I think it's a good thing, and I want the niggas to lose their trademark too. I do.
All right.
I do.
All right.
I'll explain that. I'll explain that. But if we're ready to deal with the disrespect of having a human being caricatured on a side of a helmet, if we're willing to deal with that, then maybe I should be able to not have to listen to music that assaults me with the N-word every 5 seconds. I'm just saying, it's a consideration. All right, folks. Going to a classic groove. This is the Ohio Players, Pride and Vanity. We'll be right back. Ohio Players, Pride and Vanity. I'm pretty sure our listenership recognizes that first few notes. That first few notes has been sampled to death. I think Mary J. Blige actually sampled that beginning intro for one of her earlier works. Again, Ohio Players, Pride and Vanity. We're back, folks, after our featuring Captain Kirk. The call in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Before the break, I was talking about the trademark office weighing in on the naming of the Washington Redskins. It's been at issue for quite some time, and I think Harry Reid weighing in on it the way that he did. You know, you have a top government official saying, listen, we need to really deal with this. The owners, they really want to take this fight. And I'm thinking to myself, they really want to fight this thing. And my belief is when you really look at this, you see a caricature of a Native American on the side of your helmet of a Washington. I mean, think about that. This is a human being, or supposed to be a human being. This is not unlike Darkie toothpaste, which is still being sold in Asia. I have Darkie toothpaste, incidentally. I have a few artifacts, just for the record. So people know. If you don't collect some of the stuff, I have a collection of Black Americana. And some of it is quite offensive. I have a whites-only sign. You have to have this stuff, because especially for younger people, because they will think, and you can see how it is, how it's going now, think this is appropriate. They're not getting it. They don't know the history. This is physical evidence. So my thoughts on this was that, hey, I applaud it. It's going to be a fight. I don't know why at this, in the 21st century, we're still fighting a team called Redskins. I did happen to listen to a program recently, the Jay Thomas Show on SiriusXM, and there was a gentleman that called up that described himself as a Native American, and he's a young guy, and some of what he was saying is very reminiscent of the N-word debate with black folk. He had said he didn't necessarily have a problem with the Redskin thing. Younger Native Americans didn't seem to have a problem with it. Older generations of Native Americans, they didn't like it. Conversely, you could think about on the black side of things. Older African Americans normally, from what I could see, they don't seem to have a penchant for the N-word on wax and in movies and just the flagrant use and the comfort with it. Younger ones, nigger versus nigga, it means something different, all this stuff, and yet, again, they're selling Darkie toothpaste and Darkie soap with a caricature of a black person. What's the difference between having a team called Redskins and having a caricature of a, quote, red-skinned person? You know, it goes to show you that when you are a defeated people, whether you're black, whether you are Native American, then all of a sudden you become somebody's mascot. You become a logo. You know, they had to straighten out Aunt Jemima. For many years, she was a caricature of a mammy. Uncle Ben, I believe, has been straight. I think now you see him as in a suit. Before, you know, he came off like some kind of help, like the help. And we're still seeing the help on movies. So what do I know? Captain, your thoughts on the Redskins and this trademark issue?
Well, just to build on what you just said so tremendously to a high level, let's be honest here, people. The white man came to America, slaughtered the Indian, and made themselves the indigenous people of America, even though they are not. We know this to be true. I'm not making this up. We all know this here. The AfroNerd listener is very educated and very intelligent. You know this to be true. So when you slaughter the people and whatever survivors are left, you throw them on reservations, they do not have a strong voice. Just imagine if there was more indigenous people, Indians, here than white people. This wouldn't be a debate. You see? So this is what you have happening. This is why we're going back and forth with this, because the powers that be really don't care, even though it's a liberal agenda now via the internet and all the social media outlets and all the, you know, the TV shows and everything else, and from the top, liberal agenda, even though the conservatives say it's not, but it actually it is, you know. So, but the powers that be really don't care, because they are the powers that be. And the Indian population, there's not that many of them. Listen to the terminology, red skin. That's racist, you know. Just as the Indians said to the white man, pale face. There's a reason, because they were at each other's necks. That's what it's built from, and that's the reality, and that's the truth. That's what we're dealing with. Just as the great AfroNerd said, you really don't have a voice when you have those small numbers. If there were a lot of them, different story. We wouldn't be talking about this. So there you have it. Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd.
You're telling the truth. I'm not even sure if Indian is the right has ever been. I mean, now we lay off of that. But when
no,
you think about
right.
it, because listen,
it's not.
The reality is, this is how crazy it is. The only reason why Native Americans, or as you so aptly said, indigenous people, are
go.
Called Indians is because Christopher Columbus, the Europeans, were attempting to go to India.
That's right. That's correct.
So you're going to make them Indians anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you never. So think about the hubris on that, Captain.
Uh-huh.
You know, we know this is not India, but we're going to make you Indians anyway. It sounds crazy. And again, people will abuse you and disrespect you as long as you are willing. There's no sense of moral component here. This is what happens. You talk about the quantum wave theory and that kind of thing, quantum wave collapse. I think about that more than ever now, Cassie, because these memes are dangerous. They're dangerous because they set up a certain standard. They set up a certain lifestyle. And what happens is things become normative. Worldstar Hip Hop gets 30 million views a month. It's one of the top websites in the world. Not just the country, in the world. So you have a clownish representation of black folk that's disseminated on an international level. And we're so backwards that we have kind of sort of accepted this as normal. This is normative. So when you see a human being as a caricature on someone's helmet or jersey, and that's okay, and you are going to defend it as okay, that means that on some level it has become normative, unless someone who has been able to unplug that matrix cable and see and is able to see in between the diodes and the lines and the digital data and say, listen, no, this is not right. So the only thing I will say, and I mentioned this before the break, was that I applaud what's happening with the Native Americans, but it reminds me that we have gotten to the point where the N-word, the quote-unquote N-word, nigga, is normative. And if we can dismantle redskins as a term, we certainly should be able to dismantle nigga. I was I was outside my home recently, and I just so happened to go towards my front entrance, and I saw this young man. But this could be any day. This could be any day, Captain. It could be of any ethnicity, mind you. That's what makes it even more crazy, hence the normative aspect. I saw a young man driving a car. It's the summertime, so his windows were down, playing rap music. And it dawned on me that at any moment that I listen to somebody driving their cars with rap music on, the current state of rap music, I am going to hear the N-word. Plain and simple. I'm going to hear it, which leads me to believe that even hip-hop 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you might have gotten two N-words per song. But for me to be able to listen to, at any moment in a record, I just don't happen to hear the N-word loud in my face. I don't think people understand what I'm talking about. You should not be able to listen to a record haphazardly, and every time you listen to that record, you are going to be assaulted by the N-word. That means way too many N-words. You know, if I listen to, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of some kind of, this is of Sergio's alley. I'm thinking of something, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. I'm actually thinking of something else. Imagine listening to that record, and then all of a sudden, the N-word comes out. I mean, it's absurd. But what I'm saying is, you know what that record sounds like. You don't expect it. You don't expect in any break in the record for the N-word to just be there. At any moment, at any time, black male in the car, white male in the car, white female in the car, black female in the car. Hip-hop music is so ubiquitous. At any given moment, I rest assure you, for the 30 seconds, let's say 15 seconds that I have, that I may be in a situation to listen to the music because of the car, because of the music blaring, I'm going to hit an N-word. It's crazy. It's crazy. So I just hope that at some point we start to realize that I don't give a damn about these people who are insistent that the N-word is okay to use because it's you've made it normative. And just as the caricature of a Native American person is offensive because it's a human being, I don't want to be assaulted by the N-word just tending to my lawn. That's it. I think it's over. Matter of fact, I've heard the argument more. I'm not the only one making this argument. More and more people are saying, "Hey, you know, if we're going to talk about ethnic slurs, maybe we might have to deal with these record companies and DJs and promoters and what have you to deal, because it's basically the same argument." What are your thoughts about that, Captain? Being able to segue from redskin to nigga.
Well, you see, this is the thing that black people have to understand. Black people are a bunch of fools when it comes to this. It's just the argument. Let's talk about chitlins, and I'll slide it back into the N-word. Black people turn around and say the slave master gave us this throwaway food, and we cleaned it up. All right? We know collard greens wasn't good food. We know chitlins was not good food. And they turn around and say, well, we made it into something wholesome. We made it into something good. Really? Really, that's what you did? So how come when you're black and you get the big check on the job, $50,000 bonus, the $100,000 check, you know, or something like that, you go to either an Italian restaurant or you go to some big expensive steakhouse? You don't go get chitlins. Maybe you go get chitlins somewhere when you get the $3 raise, when you're making $20 an hour to $3. Let's not fool ourselves. Soul food is what it is. If you're in a basement apartment, you could hook it up really nice. But a crummy penthouse apartment is always better than a basement apartment. And don't get me wrong, they are a couple of expensive soul food restaurants. But that's still not where you're going. You go to something Italian or you go to the expensive steakhouse. Next, as far as that's concerned, all right, dealing with the food. Same thing we can deal when we talk about the N-word. The N-word is a derogatory term for black people. You talk about, we cleaned it up. We made it something as a term of endearment for us black people, you know, and we keep it amongst us. If you cleaned it up so much, why is it that when a white person uses it, you get so offended? If it's cleaned up, it doesn't matter. You understand? It can't get dirty. Do you understand me, you imbeciles? If you cleaned it up, it can't get dirty. It can't get dirty. Stop fooling yourself. Your intelligence is low, black people. Not all of you. Not all of you. Apple Nerd listener actually is very intelligent, so it shows a lot of us can be very intelligent. But the general overall consensus within the group is low with this type of foolishness. This is foolishness, foolishness, foolishness. So now we do need to get rid of the word, and the same way with the whole thing with the Redskins and everything else, remove the patent, just as the great Apple Nerd says, and let's get started. And it's cleaning it up business, all right? Take your chitlins, you know, and everything else in your peach cobbler. Yes, it tastes good, but it's still a basement food. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
Yes, we only have a few minutes remaining, Captain. These shows really go so quickly. I want to touch on this. This is one of those emotional topics you always reference. I was looking at yourworld.net, yourblackworld.net, which is Boyce Watkins' outfit. And he has a piece here talking about a UC Berkeley study, an online dating study. And it's entitled Myth Proven True, Black Men More Likely to Date White Women According to Research. Now, I'm a little speculative on this because it says this was an online dating research thing. And we know if you're going to use online anything cyber as a barometer, there's no truth in cyberspace. People lie.
This is true.
I don't know how this translates into actual in-person dating behavior. I mean, obviously we see that people of all ethnicities are more comfortable with each other, and you're seeing it more, and I have no problems with it. Obviously, I have no problems with it. But I just get a little bit suspicious when all of a sudden, you know, we're hearing that, well, yeah, black guys are dating more white, or majority. They make it seem like it's a majority thing. I was under the impression that, sure, there's a rise in interracial dating, a rise in interracial marriage, but overwhelmingly, black men prefer women of color as far as what's going on day to day. Because, you know, we can see, and I'll say this towards some black women, not all, some black women, those who have been very critical of interracial dating with black men, they might go, let's use the Village as an example, Captain. I'm talking about Greenwich Village in New York. Everything is down there. And it's very common to see interracial couples in that environment. But if a black, again, the stereotypical angry black woman that has a problem with interracial dating, that type, they will see a man of color with a white female, and then they'll see one having bypassed the 10 monoracial couples. They didn't see that. They didn't see the 10 couples that the 10 monoracial couples or biracial couple, they'll make this is a problem. Wait a minute. You just passed like 10 people, or I should say 20 people, or whatever. You know, what is that? So I'm very, very suspicious of these kind of things. What are your thoughts about this? Do you think there's any truth to this? Or I mean, it's UC Berkeley.
Listen, based on empirical evidence, there's no truth to it. We're here in New York City. What do we see? New York City, you know, you go into Manhattan, what do you see? Most white people are with white people. Most black people are with black people. Most Latin people, noticeable Latin people, are with Latin people. Most Asian people are with Asian people. That's just how it works. That's the real world. And just as you said, yeah, you have a little bit of crossover here and there, and it's on the rise. But for most part, everybody's with someone who looks like themselves. That's the reality of it. I don't care what any of them say.
Exactly. You know, and actually, I support people dating whoever they want to date. I think it's just human beings. It doesn't get that deep for me. But I do want to – I also support truthful reporting. I'm like, you know, listen, that's not what I say. And this is one of the most racially diverse cities in the world. And you still have, like the captain said, you still see what you see. Although, thankfully, you see people also, because, like, you know, if you're attractive, I would want to be attracted to a lot of different types of women. I'm going to be frank. If you're attractive means you're attracted to many people, not just black women. So that's just logic. I know it may sound weird to some people, but if you are an attractive person, there shouldn't be a black attractiveness or a white attractiveness. You're just attractive. That's it. Any closing parting shots, Captain, before we get out of here?
Well, you know how the slave master felt about that. He laid up with his white woman, but he went down and got that attractive black woman.
Yeah, and now in the 21st century, we have black female comedians poking fun at it.
Yep.
Wasn't funny back then.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. All right, folks, it's been real. Check us out on Wednesday for the Midweek in Review show. Always a pleasure. Going out on He's a Fly Guy, Curtis Mayfield and Fishbone. See you on Wednesday.
Was raised the blade in from the street while the little people stare. It's all about the style and the clothes you wear. He's a fly guy, no one can deny. He's a fly guy, ain't nothing about him shy. He's a fly guy, don't even bat an eye. He's a fly guy.
let me be my own kind of man. Watch what you screw, what you do, and how you attend. What can you say? Some kind of way he conquers defeat. He's here to stay. Game of the day is street selling meat. He's a fly guy. No one can deny. He's a fly guy. Ain't nothing.